Chapter 5. The Die is Cast.
All along the watchtower, the princess kept the view, while all the women came and went, barefoot servants too. Outside in the distance, a wildcat did growl, and two riders were approaching, and the wind began to howl.
Naboo, 12 years ago, 1 week after the liberation of Naboo. Captain Panaka looked at Yoda with a flat dislike he was beginning to become accustomed to. He had seen it elsewhere, but for some reason he hadn't expected it on this world. Here, where Qui-Gon Jinn had died and Obi-Wan Kenobi had lived, both of them fighting to liberate it from its occupiers. The Naboo should have looked at the Jedi as, at the very least, allies, if not friends. Instead, they looked at the Jedi like they were the enemy. Panaka waited long enough to let Yoda know that he didn't have to answer his query, then said, "Obi-Wan's probably with the Queen. At this hour, she'll still be in the royal suite." He looked down at Yoda with a touch of superiority to the expression, almost gloating over what he probably thought was a coup against the Jedi. "I'll take you."
"Appreciate that, I would."
The columned halls of the residency were quiet at this hour, the colored marble a little faded after not having been properly cleaned in over a year, broken windows patched over with sheets of transparasteel, with carbon scoring on the walls from blaster bolts and empty niches where statues had either been smashed or removed. The public parts of the palace had been repaired and cleaned in order to accommodate official visitors, as well as the press and the Jedi. But this was private, a reminder that no matter how good a face the Naboo had placed on their newly won freedom, it had been dearly bought. Panaka didn't speak as they made their way through the nearly empty corridors. The only other beings about were guards and a handful of servants. There were no droids, cleaning or otherwise. Those that had not been cannibalized for parts during the occupation had been reassigned elsewhere in the palace, where appearances had to be kept up more rigorously than in the residency. Panaka stopped in front of a set of ornate doors and tapped a button on the control panel, making a chime sound deep inside the suite. A mellifluous female voice answered a moment later.
"Yes?"
"It's Captain Panaka. I brought Grandmaster Yoda of the Jedi Order to see Obi-Wan Kenobi."
There was a long pause. Stretching out with his senses, Yoda caught a whisper of conversation beyond the doors, along with the familiar shape of Obi-Wan's Force presence, which had always reminded him of endless windswept deserts, the flare and hum of clashing lightsabers, and a grief so deep that it had haunted him through the short decades of his life without cause. The door slid open, revealing a comfortable anteroom decorated in ambers and creams, which opened onto a balcony. Beyond it, Yoda could hear the sound of flowing water, undoubtedly one of Theed's many rivers. He began to step forward. Panaka put out a hand to stop him and said,
"Wait."
He could hear a soft conversation somewhere else in the suite. A woman, her voice light and sweet, saying, "You don't have to talk to him, Obi-Wan."
"Yes, I do," Obi-Wan replied.
Her response was too soft to make out, though Yoda could have listened through the Force if he wanted. An instant later, Obi-Wan emerged into the anteroom, dressed in brown trousers and a loose cream-colored shirt, but with his lightsaber hooked onto his belt. He bowed to Yoda, the careful, formal bow of a senior Padawan to the Grand Master of the Order, his braid falling over his shoulder.
Master Yoda.
Obi-Wan, Panaka said as he straightened. Is this all right?
Obi-Wan nodded without looking at him.
Speak in private, can we?
Yoda asked.
We can go to my chambers, Obi-Wan said.
This way.
He clapped Panaka on the shoulder, ignoring the guard captain's suspicious look. As they went down the quiet hallway, Obi-Wan automatically slowed his long strides to match Yoda's short ones. They didn't go far. Panaka was still in sight when Obi-Wan stopped in front of a door and tapped the controls, standing back so Yoda could enter before him. This suite was decorated similarly to the Queen's, the antechamber airy and well-lit from the floor-to-ceiling windows that surrounded the now-closed balcony doors. Yoda could sense Obi-Wan's long occupation in the room. He didn't need to see the flight jacket flung over the back of an armchair, or the blaster cleaning kit sitting beside a powered-down data pad on the coffee table. Despite this, there was still a sparse quality to it. Even after a year away from the Order, a Jedi didn't have the natural tendency to acquire possessions. Obi-Wan crossed to the balcony doors and flung them open, letting in a breath of warm spring air. In the distance, Yoda could hear waterfalls. The residency was right up against the cliff face. Yoda moved slowly forward to the center of the chamber, taking in the room as he did so. Closed doors undoubtedly led to the bedroom. He could sense the lingering presence of the Queen there, as though the woman's robe that lay forgotten across the arm of a divan wasn't evidence enough of Obi-Wan's broken vows. As well as the refresher and whatever other rooms a suite like this was equipped with. The decor on the walls must have come with the room. Watercolor scenes of various places on Naboo, including the palace itself. The only irregularity was the rack of blaster rifles on the wall, displacing a painting that was currently standing forgotten in a corner. He felt Obi-Wan's uncertainty in the Force as he waited for Yoda to respond. He had been a Jedi too long to speak out of turn in front of any council member, especially one as senior as Yoda. And Yoda used that to his full advantage, letting the silence lean on Obi-Wan as he studied the room. Jedi you are, he said at last. Jedi you were born, Obi-Wan. And Jedi you will live, and Jedi you will die.
Obi-Wan shook his head slowly.
I cannot do it, Master. I will not do it.
Yoda tapped his gimmer stick on the hardwood floor to emphasize his words.
Jedi you are, Obi-Wan, and with the Jedi your fate lies, not with the Naboo. Serve the Republic, we do, not merely one system.
Obi-Wan crossed the room to kneel down in front of him, putting them on level with each other. He wrapped his hands around one knee. Perhaps the Republic does not deserve the Jedi anymore, Master. I will not serve an institution that not only fails but refuses to protect and to respect those that rely upon it.
Is it of the Jedi or the Republic that you speak, young Padawan?
Obi-Wan's mouth tightened at the words.
Or of both, Yoda added shrewdly.
You know what the Senate has decided, Obi-Wan said. People died because of the Trade Federation's occupation here, and they'll get away with a slap on the wrist of that. The Senate wants to blame the whole thing on the Naboo because it's easier than disciplining the Trade Federation. They'll punish us because of their failure. Even Chancellor Palpatine believes that the Queen will have no choice but to accept the Senate's ultimatum if she wants her system to survive past the end of the year. He paused.
Chancellor Palpatine doesn't know her very well.
ended your duty here is, Yoda said. Important your thoughts are, but no longer your concern. Here to prevent exploitation and corruption, Master Shaak Ti and Master Adagalia will remain.
Obi-Wan's voice was icy.
I will not do it, Master. I understand that the Jedi must publicly support the Senate's decisions, but I will not be party to that. I have seen too many innocents die to mutely support a Senate that is held captive by its purse strings and its pride, by bureaucrats who have forgotten that men and women live and die by their decisions.
Yoda tapped his gimmer stick again.
Not the arena of the Jedi politics are. In the Senate and the Supreme Chancellor, we must place our trust,
and they have betrayed it,
Obi-Wan said, only his intonation betraying his anger. His voice didn't rise at all.
Yes, Master. Naboo is only one world, and the Republic is made up of many thousands of worlds, but that does not make this one world any less worth saving. The Trade Federation will do this again in some other system, and the Senate will do nothing. The Jedi will do nothing, even though our duty is to the people of the Republic, not to the Senate. If I go back to the Jedi, I support that. And I will not do that. My place is here.
With the Jedi, your place is, Yoda corrected ruthlessly. Or for nothing did Qui-Gon Jinn die.
Obi-Wan's mouth went tight again.
Qui-Gon died because the Jedi failed him, he said. There is darkness in this galaxy, the likes of which the Jedi have not dreamed in 1,000 years. The Council should have seen it. We should never have walked into that trap.
All-seeing the Jedi are not, young Obi-Wan. Know that you do.
I know that the death of a knight will not go unnoticed by the rest of the Jedi,
Obi-Wan spat, his hands tightening around his knee.
Qui-Gon had many friends among the Jedi. His own master still lives. Did Master Dooku fail to notice when his former apprentice was murdered? Did the entire Order collectively decide that the death of one knight was of no importance? Did you forget that I...
He stopped abruptly, then continued more calmly.
I promised the Naboo that the Jedi would come. I gave them my word that the Jedi would come, if for no other reason than to find out how Qui-Gon Jinn died. And you never came. You left us here. You knew we were walking into a war, and you still left us here.
Not in your power it was to make those promises, Yoda said after a moment. Forbidden to interfere we were by the Senate, by the Supreme Chancellor.
Obi-Wan just shook his head.
And that, my master, is why I will not return to the Order.
Qui-Gon's defiance I sense in you, Yoda said. Need that you do not.
Appreciate it in this he would not.
Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan said, isn't here.
He reached down and unhooked his lightsaber from his belt, holding it out towards Yoda. Will you take his lightsaber back to the temple? Yoda pushed it gently back towards him.
Keep it. A reminder it is that Jedi you are, that Jedi you will live and die.
Obi-Wan shook his head, returning the lightsaber to his belt. He stood and walked away, tugging his Padawan braid between his fingers as he stared out of the balcony. Quietly, Yoda added,
"For the woman you have done this?"
Obi-Wan turned towards him, his surprise echoing in the Force.
"No," he said. Yes, I broke my vows with her, but I would have left her for the Order. For the Order as I knew it, but not for the Senate, and not for what the Order has become. I see clearly now, Master, as the Council cannot, will not. I would have left Padme if my life was all that was at stake, but it isn't. This is bigger than me, bigger than her, bigger than the Jedi. You just don't know it yet, Master. Yoda shook his head disapprovingly. As the Jedi, the Force it is we serve. Bigger than us all it is. I cannot serve both the Republic and the Force, Obi-Wan said. Not anymore. He locked his hands behind his back again, his gaze fixed forwards. All my life I have let others make my choices for me. But this is a path I must walk alone, Master. Nearly a knight you are, Obi-Wan. A home you will always have with the Jedi. Yoda regarded him steadily. Leave us, you should not. Maybe not, Master, Obi-Wan said. But I'm doing it anyway. Coruscant, present day. Jedi converged on the Outlander Club at a dead run. Although they had deferred to the Note's request for a private meeting in the club itself, Obi-Wan Kenobi was far too dangerous even for Yoda to face on his own, and so a dozen knights had gathered discreetly around the building's outskirts, ready to react when Yoda triggered his comlink alert or at the first sign of trouble. Yoda hadn't had time to set off the alert, but his agony ripped through the Force. Jedi flung off their disguises, lightsabers appearing in their hands as they stormed the club. Civilians fled, screaming from their charge, spilling past them into the street. "I've got him," yelled Adi Gallia, who had been one of the first inside the club. She deactivated her lightsaber and returned it to her belt, her hands held out over the diminutive green form collapsed on the hover chair. "He is alive!" "Spread out," Sayasi Teen ordered. "Find Kenobi." He bent over Yoda, adding his strength to Adi's as the two masters fought to keep him alive. "Someone get a transport. Master Yoda, can you hear me? Did you see him?" "He's put himself into a healing sleep," Adi said, eyeing the dark-edged wound in Yoda's torso. "This was made by a lightsaber. Where's that transport?"
"I've got it, Master Gallia," shouted Barriss Offee, who had lingered near the entrance to the club.
"Contact the temple, tell them what happened," Adi ordered, sending the hover chair moving quickly and smoothly towards the door. "I want the healers ready for him." "You get him back to the temple, I'll coordinate the search," Stacey said, grasping her shoulder. "May the Force be with you."
"May the Force be with us all," Adi said. "If Kenobi could get the drop on Yoda, then we're going to need it."
Padme walked into the Twilight's cockpit to see Anakin Skywalker and Captain Rex staring suspiciously at each other from opposite sides of the room, neither of them apparently willing to say anything. Without breaking the gaze, Rex said, "M'lady, is the General all right? The captain here said that he was injured."
"He's asleep," Padme said, taking a seat at what she thought was a navigator station. "Obi-Wan put him in some kind of Jedi healing coma, which knocked Obi-Wan out, too." Ani finally looked at her.
"He's seriously Obi-Wan Kenobi? The Obi-Wan Kenobi? Who are you, Queen Amidala?"
Rex's gaze flickered toward Padme, his hand drifting towards his holstered blaster, before she shook her head slightly.
"No," she said. "I used to be one of her handmaidens. I'm the senator for Naboo."
Ani's mouth tightened somewhat, as if he had sensed the lie.
"Oh, great," he drawled,
I'm on a flying tin can with one of Amidala's handmaidens, a clone trooper, and two Jedi, one of whom is another me, and one of whom is Obi-Wan Griffin Kenobi. Why does this poodoo always happen to me?
Has this happened before? Padme asked, startled.
Well, not this, Ani said, but it's always something. You're, what, in the CIS Senate? The Jedi went over to the Seps in your universe?
I'm a member of the Galactic Senate, Padme said primly. Obi-Wan and Anakin are Jedi generals in the Grand Army of the Republic, where Rex is a captain. Count Dooku is the leader of the Separatists, and Palpatine was the Supreme Chancellor.
Ani stared at her.
At last, he said.
Well, that's new.
He's taking this too well, Rex said suspiciously.
What in blazes do you want me to do? Throw you off my ship? Ani said. We're in hyperspace. I'm not dropping into real space just so I can shove you into an escape pod and take off the other side of the galaxy. Besides, you already told me you were from another universe. It's not like it's the weirdest thing I've ever heard before.
I run cargo on the outer rim in wild space, soldier boy. You have any idea what kind of crazy poodoo is out there?
He glanced at Padme and added, a little more subdued.
Besides, I can always tell when people are lying.
The Force? Padme asked.
His mouth twisted. That's what the Jedi who tried to kill me called it.
Rex stiffened, his hand creeping towards his blaster again. But all he said was,
Why do the Jedi want to arrest you? What did you do?
Ani snorted.
Why do the Jedi do anything? You've met them, right? They're all crazy.
Rex leaned forward, his voice slow and deliberately provocative.
I think I know them a lot better than you do. Jedi don't do anything without a reason.
Hate to break it to you, soldier boy, but they sure as Sunrise tried to kill me without one.
Padme licked her lips, feeling tired, and saw Ani's gaze dart to her mouth.
She had a strong suspicion that his agreement to ferry them into Separatist space had less to do with her oratory abilities and more to do with the fact that he thought she was pretty. Which was at least one thing that he and Anakin had in common.
Maybe we got off on the wrong foot, Captain, she said.
Actually, you'd be surprised by how many people I meet by kicking the crap out of each other and then getting shot at by the local cops, so I can tick off another planet on the list of places I can't get back to, Ani said. But sure, Senator, where do you want to start?
So many secrets. So many things she knew about Anakin that no one else did, not even Obi-Wan. How many of them would be true here, for this Anakin Skywalker? Padme considered and discarded a dozen possibilities in an instant before saying, Where's your mother? Where's Shmi?
Whatever Ani had been expecting, it hadn't been that.
He blinked and said,
She's dead.
How do you know about my mother? I didn't think Jedi even had parents.
I met her once, Padme said, a long time ago. Our ship was damaged and we had to stop on Tatooine to repair it. We were being escorted by two Jedi. One of them, a Jedi Knight named Qui-Gon Jinn, recognized Anakin and brought him back to Coruscant to be trained at the temple.
Ani snorted.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
You want to know how I got off Tatooine?
It would be interesting.
They all looked up at the sound of Obi-Wan's voice. Padme shivering a little when she realized that she hadn't heard him enter the cockpit. He was leaning against the wall by the hatch, wrapped in his cloak, but with his hood pushed back. His gaze was fixed on Ani, thoughtful and a little predatory.
Ani looked rattled by his sudden appearance, but all he said was, Fine. You know I was a slave, right? My owner, this Todarian named Watto,
sold my mom to a moisture farmer out by Mos Eisley to pay off a gambling debt. I was 12, 13, but then I'd figured out how to disable my tracker, so I pulled it out and went after my mom. He shrugged. Turned out that the guy had freed her and she liked him enough to marry him. Jabba's slave takers were after me, so I couldn't stick around. I got a berth on a starship out of Mos Eisley, spent the next few years bouncing around the outer rim and the mid-rim until I could get my own ship. He glanced around, giving the twilight a proud, proprietary look, then grinned at Padme. Winner racing on a borrowed swoop bike. I'm shocked to hear that, Obi-Wan said dryly. Ani peered at him suspiciously, presumably trying to figure out if Obi-Wan had meant that remark seriously or not, then leaned back. Well, we can't all be Jedi. That's certainly true. Obi-Wan shifted slightly, his cloak slipping open to reveal the lightsaber on his hip. Why did Plo Koon want to arrest you? He didn't recognize Anakin, so it must have been you he wanted. The Kaldor? At Obi-Wan's nod, Ani ran a hand over his face in a disturbingly familiar gesture. I've always been able to do stuff. Move things without touching them, see the future, get people to do what I want. I always know when people are lying. The Force, Obi-Wan said. Most Force-sensitive beings that aren't found by the Order never learn how to manipulate it. You're very unusual. Ani bared his teeth in something that wasn't even remotely a grin. What was it your friend called me? Feral? Obi-Wan looked uncomfortable. That's the Jedi term for it, yes. A feral solitary. It's not very polite. Yeah, I got that. Ani eyed him warily. A couple years ago, right before the war started heating up, I ran into a Jedi on Christophsis. I was in a cantina, I was drunk, I guess I must have done some of my little tricks and then blacked out. I woke up on some starship with a hangover and some Jedi asking me questions. Who taught me? Who was my master? For gods like that. Asked me if I was Sith, whatever the blazes that means. Asked me if I'd ever been to Naboo or Mustafar, if I knew Obi-Wan Kenobi. He glanced at Obi-Wan, who looked back steadily. Or some pedunkey called Darth Maul. Do you? Obi-Wan asked. I don't know what your universe is like, but in this one, smugglers like me don't hang out with royalty. Obi-Wan blinked once. I'm not royalty. Maul certainly wasn't. Yeah, well, the Queen's Knight might not be royalty, but he lives in the palace and he sleeps with the Queen, so there's not a big difference to me. Ani bit down on an already close-chewed nail. This Jedi decided he didn't like my answers, so he was taking me back to Coruscant to your temple. I didn't like that idea. I knocked him out, got away, and the next thing I know, there's a killer capture order on me in the Republic. That's why I don't like the Jedi. How did you manage to overpower a Jedi Knight? Rex said doubtfully. His hand was resting lightly on his blaster grip. Padme couldn't remember him moving it there. Ani spread his hands. I'm just that good. Is that enough for you people? Can I get some answers now? Certainly, Obi-Wan said. Provided you ask the right questions. Nobody had thought to notify the Supreme Chancellor of the attack, but he arrived at the Jedi Temple soon after Adigalia and Yoda did, running down the halls from the speeder bay he had landed with 60 years' familiarity as a Jedi Knight. Due to the late hour, he was dressed plainly. His old curved lightsaber hung at his belt. I felt the disturbance in the Force, Dooku said, coming to a halt in front of the closed doors to one of the halls of healing operating rooms as Adigalia turned towards him. The Thalathian master was pacing in front of the door, her thumbs tucked into her belt, and her distress clear on her face. What happened? It was a trap, Adi said. Obi-Wan Kenobi, or someone using his name, sent a message asking Yoda to meet him in the Outlander Club in the entertainment district. Master Yoda was supposed to go alone, but he took a team of Jedi along to wait outside and arrest Kenobi. None of us were inside when it happened. Sacy Teen and the others are looking for him now.
Yoda's still alive?
Dooku asked, looking towards the door as though he was thinking of storming past her.
Yoda had, after all, been his master when he was a Padawan.
Adi nodded. I was the first one there. Barriss Offee, one of the knights with us, is trained as a healer. She said the lightsaber wound missed everything vital. It's like Kenobi wasn't trying to kill him.
Obi-Wan should have known better, she added, frowning. I thought Kenobi had gone to Boz Pity to rendezvous with Bail Organa, Dooku said.
Adi's mouth tightened.
Plo Koon also ran into him on Isolde in the Mid-Rim, but he escaped along with a feral solitary we've been hunting for some years now.
So in short, Dooku said, the Jedi don't know where Obi-Wan Kenobi is.
She hesitated, then said, no. Master Windu and his task force are still in hyperspace. We haven't been able to contact them yet. Plo Koon and his Padawan are in pursuit of the fugitives.
So there are three teams of Jedi in three different parts of the galaxy, all looking for the same man?
Dooku asked, and at Adi's nod, said,
no wonder we haven't won this blasted war yet. I gave the Jedi one order, and that was not to go after Kenobi or Amidala without notifying me. I was not told about Isolde or about this meeting.
Adi drew herself up, remembering that she was a Jedi Master and member of the High Council, with more rank inside this temple than the Supreme Chancellor held. At least more than Dooku held now, having left the Order.
Nothing was certain, she said. All we had was rumor. It wasn't worth bringing to your office, Your Excellency.
If the Jedi hear even a whisper about Kenobi, I want to hear about it, Dooku snapped. Try and remember that he isn't merely a rogue Jedi, even if Windu is correct and he has gone to the dark side. He is Queen Amidala's lover and bodyguard, if not her consort, and Amidala is now the head of a foreign state. There are politics at stake, not merely pride.
Master Yoda was certain that he would not be in danger from Kenobi, Your Excellency, Adi said. Her comm link beeped before she could continue. Nodding apology to Dooku, she stepped away to answer it. Dooku studied the closed door to the operating room with dismay, as though by looking at it he could find the answers he sought. The wrongness in the Force gnawed at him, but he couldn't tell if it had to do merely with Master Yoda's wounds, or if there was something more sinister at its root. Try as he might to recall Kenobi's Force presence, he couldn't do it. He had only met the other man once in passing, when he and Amidala had come together some years ago to try and resolve the Separatists' complaints with the Senate, before that had become impossible. All he could remember was an impression, like lightning in a sandstorm. It wasn't enough to track him through the Force, especially on a planet as populated as Coruscant. And from what Dooku could tell, it was entirely possible that the attempted assassin hadn't been Obi-Wan Kenobi at all. Adi Gallia returned to him, folding her hands inside the sleeves of her cloak. That was Master Teen. There's no sign of Kenobi, but a security droid caught an image of whoever attacked Master Yoda. Dooku raised his eyebrows, waiting.
It wasn't Kenobi?
No. Adi held up a holoprojector, displaying a crackly security holo in the space above it. The sound was muted and distorted, too much of it picked up to make out anything individually, but the picture was clear enough. They watched as Yoda, on his hover chair, was approached by a hooded and cloaked figure. An instant later, they both flinched as a lightsaber blade ignited and deactivated almost in the same instant. The figure turned away, vanishing almost immediately from the holocam's pickup zone. but not before some trick of the security droid's position caught one remark.
Obi-Wan Kenobi sends his regards.
A woman, Dooku said. The voice had been crackly and weak over the distance, but clearly female. I thought we had no indication that Kenobi had taken an apprentice. We don't. Adi's handsome face was fixed in a frown. This isn't his style. He's straightforward. Too much of a Jedi for these theatrics. My instincts tell me that this wasn't his doing.
Mine as well, Dooku said heavily. Mine as well. But if not Kenobi, then who?
Padme woke to Captain Rex's soft snores, and the faint sound of Obi-Wan murmuring restlessly in his sleep, his voice too quiet to make out any words. She sat up on her bunk, squinting in the pale light of the cabin's single-lit luma. Rex had his hands on his blasters, while Obi-Wan was clutching his lightsaber like a good luck charm. It was how he had spent every night on the Queen Brea, as well as on the Resolute on the way to Mustafar. She wondered if he ever slept without his blade any longer. Wrapping her coat around herself, she went to sit down on the edge of Anakin's bunk, watching him sleep. She thought that his color was better. The harsh lines of his face seemed to have softened a little, though that might just have been a trick of the light. Padme sat and listened to him breathe, mingled with Rex's snores and Obi-Wan's whispers. She caught the sound of Anakin's name amongst it, along with hers, Qui-Gon Jinn's, and the Duchess Satine's. Nightmares, like the ones Anakin had without exception on the rare nights they were able to share a bed. She thought that most Jedi had them these days. After a while, she got up to use the rusher. The ship was silent in the emptiness of hyperspace, lit only by the emergency lumas at this hour. Padme washed her hands, looking at her reflection in the dirty mirror as she tried to reorder her hair, mussed from sleep. When she stepped back out into the corridor, meaning to go back to the cabin and finish going through her saved holonews reports, she saw that one of the other cabin doors was open, spilling light into the corridor. Padme hesitated, then heard a familiar mechanized voice, and couldn't resist going to investigate. Threepio? The protocol droid, plated silver rather than gold, but still immediately recognizable, swung around to look at her. So did Annie Skywalker, who was sitting at a work table and fooling around with a partially disassembled probe droid. I beg your pardon, I don't believe we've been introduced, C-3PO said. I am C-3PO, Human-Cyborg Relations. It's a pleasure to meet you, Padme said, surprised at how evenly the words came out. I'm Padme.
3PO is a protocol droid,
Ani said, resting the probe droid in his lap. I built him when I was a kid to help my mom at work. After mom died, I brought him back with me. He comes in pretty handy sometimes. I am fluent in over 6 million forms of communication, 3PO informed Padme, as Master Ani's vocabulary sometimes seems to be made largely of profanity. I have found that my presence is often conducive to a more congenial...
3PO, that's really not necessary, Ani said hastily.
He grinned at Padme.
Sorry, he's a little overenthusiastic sometimes.
I know, Padme said, smiling back. Back in my timeline, he belongs to me.
He does?
I do. Padme nodded. Anakin gave him to me as a gift. Well, I never, C-3PO said, in his prim, familiar voice. Padme wondered if Ani had told him about the alternate universe, and if he had, how he had taken it. Either in stride or with a great deal of panic, she expected. Curious, she added. Do you have an astromech droid named R2-D2, too? No astromechs. I've never found one I really liked, and the good ones are usually too expensive to pick up on the open market anyway. 3PO, you can go, he added. C-3PO bowed stiffly to Padme, then trundled off through the open door. At Ani's gesture, Padme took the seat he had just vacated. I suppose there's no real reason you'd have R2, she said. If he hasn't been destroyed, he's probably still on Naboo with the RNSF.
The security forces, right, Ani said. I wouldn't think a senator would have much use for an astromech.
You'd be surprised, Padme said. He's been on loan to a friend for the past few years, though. Ani's mouth twisted.
Oh, the Jedi. That's why you asked.
I'm sorry, I saw 3PO and... Well, he and R2 are friends. I just wondered.
It's fine.
He turned his attention back to the probe droid, using a pair of tweezers to pull out a thin copper wire.
Can't sleep? I know some people can't in hyperspace.
It isn't that, Padme said. She rested an elbow on the table, chin cupped against the palm of her hand. If she shut her eyes, it was almost like being back on Coruscant, on one of the rare occasions when Anakin could get away from the Jedi Temple for more than a few hours, long enough that his stay in her apartments left them with enough time for something other than sex, sleep, and food. This must be very strange for you.
I've seen weirder. Not much weirder, but...
He shrugged, doing something complicated inside the droid with both hands.
Like I said, I run cargo on the Outer Rim, into wild space sometimes. Out beyond the edge of civilized space, there's a lot of crazy stuff. Granted, usually it doesn't walk onto my ship and try to kick the poodle out of me, let alone pay for a passage. But still.
He looked up.
This thing inside me, my sixth sense or the force or whatever. I always know when someone's lying. And you're telling the truth. If it's this crazy, then I want to be a part of it.
That's very brave of you, Padme said.
Ani put his tools down. My mom...
For a moment, his voice caught, but then he went on.
My mom always said that I had a greater destiny than I'd ever find on Tatooine. I thought she meant out here, but... Look, I'm not a Jedi. Not like your friend. But this is the first time I've really felt like there's something bigger out there. Like I'm finally headed where I need to be instead of just schlepping cargo between one star system and the next. I don't know what it means. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. But it's the first time I've ever felt like that, so I'll follow it for now.
Thank you, Padme said. She reached out and laid her hand over his, filling the familiar shape of the bone beneath the skin. That means a lot to me, and I know that the others appreciate it too. Even Anakin, when he wakes up. Ani looked down at her hand, then slowly withdrew his out from under it.
I'm not doing it to be thanked. I know you're not telling me things, and I get that, I do, really. If I was in your shoes, I wouldn't be talking much either. Especially if you're comparing me to him.
I'm not, Padme said, startled. You're not... She'd meant to say, you're not anything like him. But realized too late how that might sound.
Ani's mouth twisted. I know.
He seems kind of like a dick, though, so I'm not really sure I want to be anything like him.
I always thought those laser swords were overrated anyway.
I wouldn't mention that to Anakin, Padme said, rising to go.
He does love his lightsaber.
Ba's Pity, the graveyard planet, no longer had any residents, despite the fact that it was suited for human and near-human life. Mace Windu watched to come into view from the viewport as the Jedi ship approached the planet, feeling a sense of grave disquiet that he couldn't put a finger on.
We're picking up a distress signal,
said Quinlan Vos, one of the knights who had volunteered for this mission. He was serving as the ship's co-pilot, but his gaze was fixed on the communication sensor boards.
It's Alderaanian.
Let's check it out. Master Fisto, bring us in. Kit Fisto, the pilot, nodded, changing the ship's angle slightly to account for the coordinates transmitted by the distress signal.
Are we picking up any other chatter?
Voss was quiet for a few seconds, his fingers flicking over the sensor boards as he rotated frequencies.
That's it. Other than that, we're quiet across the board. No contacts.
They drifted down through the planet's atmosphere. Despite, or perhaps because of, the ruins left behind by the planet's now extinct original species, Buzz Pity was an attractive planet, with a slightly heavier gravity than galactic average, and a clean, unpolluted atmosphere. For generations out of mind, visitors from other systems had come here to lay their dead to rest, so the planet was dotted with thousands of memorials of various shapes and sizes, all scattered amidst the ruins of its former civilization. The Jedi cruiser landed near one of these, a massive cracked stone head with a trail of purple flowers across the brow like a crown. Not far away, a thin stream of smoke trailing into the sky, was the broken, battered form of an Alderaanian CR-90 Corvette. Ident code reads as the diplomatic vessel Tantive IV out of Alderaan, Voss noted, before he began shutting the cruiser's systems down.
It's Bail Organa's ship, Mace said. No other contacts?
There's a power signature about 100 meters away, but it's very faint. Might be debris from the Corvette.
We'll check it out after we've finished here, Mace said. Everyone, be on your guard. It could be a trap.
Expecting to find Obi-Wan Kenobi, who had already shown himself to be more than a match for a trained knight, Mace had brought a task force of 6 other Jedi beside himself. Kit Fisto, Quinlan Vos, Shaak Ti, Deepa Balaba, and the twins Tiplar and Tipli. No matter how many tricks Kenobi had learned over the years, 7 masters would be enough to bring him down. But it wasn't Kenobi that was waiting for them when they left the cruiser.
These are Federation battle droids, Kit said, crouching down to inspect the fallen droids.
Mace turned over one of the gray-uniformed bodies.
And Alderaanian sailors. Master Fisto, Master Balaba, check for survivors. Maybe the droids missed someone. Masters Tiplar and Tipli, spread out and...
Master Windu! He turned. Tiplar was waving a commando droid's severed head at him.
These marks are made by a lightsaber, she said.
Mace went to investigate.
Kenobi,
he observed.
You didn't send commando droids after a senator and a civilian crew. You sent them after Jedi, or the next thing to it.
It looks like an ambush, Shaak Ti observed. A glint of metal caught Mace's eye from behind a 6-fingered stone foot, nearly the size of a cruiser. He went to investigate, followed by Shaak Ti and Quinlan Vos, and found himself looking at the smoldering yellow and chrome body of what had been a Naboo Royal N1 starfighter. A pilot's helmet lay discarded on the ground beside it. Voss stepped over and picked it up, holding it.
Obi-Wan's, he said after a moment.
He had the Kefar force talent of psychometry, the ability to read the history of an object simply by touching it.
He took it off after touching down, but the shooting hadn't started yet. He probably never knew what hit him.
He dropped the helmet, spinning around a moment later with his lightsaber in his fist. Shaak Ti and Mace already had theirs in hand, frowning in the direction of a cautious warble from beneath a patch of thorn bushes. A blue and white astromech droid rolled out, remaining well back from them. The Jedi deactivated their lightsabers.
Hey there, little guy, Mace said.
The astromech beeped at him. When he made to approach, it opened a panel on its chassis and extended a thin arm that crackled with electricity.
I take it that he is a separatist droid, Shakti observed, sounding amused.
She returned her lightsaber to her belt and raised empty hands.
Hello, my friend. We are not here to harm you. Did you arrive with Captain Kenobi?
The droid chirped in affirmative. Automatically, Mace glanced at the remains of the starfighter. The astromech socket was empty. It must have disengaged before the trap was sprung.
Did you see what happened here?
The droid chirped again, but didn't offer any further information.
We're looking for Captain Kenobi, Mace said. We're old friends of his.
He hesitated. They could easily have overpowered the droid, but he knew from experience how difficult it could be getting information from a recalcitrant droid, especially one as intelligent as he suspected this one was. If it was the same one, then he remembered it from his last visit to Naboo, just after the planet's liberation. It would wipe its own memory, or even self-destruct, before it gave them classified information.
We don't want to harm him, he said after a moment. Or Senator Organa. If you help us, we'll return you to Naboo without slicing into your systems. We just want to find them.
Voss and Shakti both gave him surprised looks. Mace had the impression that the astromech was doing the same, maybe calculating the likelihood that he was sincere. Then it warbled an affirmative and rolled forward. They projected a hologram onto the ground in front of them, showing Kenobi, dressed in a Naboo flight officer's overcoat, leaning back against the stone foot with his arms crossed over his chest. The starfighter was just visible behind him. Mace knelt down to see better, watching as the Tantive IV touched down. Organa left the ship immediately, crossing to Kenobi. The two men embraced, and Organa passed something to Kenobi. A data chip, maybe. They were still speaking as battle droids suddenly appeared from the surrounding area, vulture droids swooping down from the sky to bomb the Alderaanian ship. Kenobi's lightsaber leapt into his hand, the blade igniting as he parried back blaster bolts. He and Organa put up a good fight, but the sheer number of battle droids eventually overwhelmed them. Organa went down first, felled by a stun blast, and Kenobi finally caught a punch across the face from a commando droid that dropped him to his knees before the droid hit him again. While the rest of the battle droids finished off the Alderaanian crew that remained, the commandos dragged Kenobi and Organa off to their ship, which had touched down during the fighting. Warbling anxiously, the astromech ended the hologram. The other Jedi had gathered around to watch, and at its conclusion, Fisto said, "The Trade Federation. But how did they learn Kenobi and Organa would meet here?"
"I assume Newt Gunray has spies inside the Confederacy, just like we do," Mace said, sitting back on his heels. "This is a troubling development."
"Captain Kenobi and Senator Organa were taken alive," Shakti said. "Why? What does the Federation hope to accomplish? They have to know that the Republic would never allow them to remain in Federation hands."
"Vengeance," Voss suggested, his expression grim. "Gunray's wanted Obi-Wan dead for a long time now. Organa is just logging up to try and force Alderaan into a treaty."
The astromech chirped cautiously, and Windu turned toward it in surprise.
"You could have led with that," he said. In return, he was rewarded with the rudest comment he'd ever heard from a droid. Voss choked a laugh into his fist and said, "All right, buddy, if he's got a tracker implanted, then where is he now?"
A series of beeps informed them that it needed the boosted signal capacity of their cruiser, so Windu and Voss accompanied it into the cockpit of their consular-class cruiser. There was a delay of several minutes as they disconnected the communications console it wanted from the rest of the ship's systems,
not wanting a separatist droid to get anything more than the absolute minimum from the Jedi ship. The R2 unit watched this impatiently, rolling forwards immediately after the last of the wires had been pulled to plug in. After a few minutes, a holomap popped up, showing the sector of the galaxy Kenobi's tracker was reporting from. Voss swore loudly enough to blister the paint on the walls, but all Mace said was,
"Dooku's not going to like this. Get the others back on board. We might still have enough time to stop the Federation from starting this war early."
Home, Padme thought, as the twilight came out of hyperspace on the far side of the Naboo system. This far distant, the planet was nothing more than a speck of light on the sensor board, the sun a little brighter in front of her, but it was still enough to make her smile.
Attention, unidentified vessel. You are entering sovereign Naboo space. Please activate your identification beacon and transmit your planetary or lunar destination and stand by.
Friendly as ever, Ani muttered, flipping a switch on the communications console.
They're a little paranoid, aren't they?
Anakin said warily. Obi-Wan had woken him from his healing sleep a few hours earlier, long enough for him to shake the groggy after-effects before they made planetfall. As far as Padme could tell, he looked much better for it, his color back and some of the strain gone from his face, though of course she didn't have any idea what it had done for his connection to the Force. Ani gave him a cautious look, then said,
"Rumor is they never really got over the Trade Federation occupation, or the trick the Senate tried to pull on them after the liberation, so they're not too keen on visitors these days."
Identification verified, Twilight. You are clear to make your planetary approach. Please avoid all restricted zones and keep to your current sublight speed and approach vector.
Ani tapped his comlink.
Acknowledge, Naboo. Thanks for the welcome.
He glanced at the sensor boards.
We've got about 20 minutes until we make planetfall at Feed Central Spaceport. That's what you wanted, right? If it isn't, tell me now, because if I change course any later, planetary defenses will blow me out of the sky.
Yes, Padme said, her heart in her throat. Home. It didn't seem quite real yet.
20 minutes it is.
He put the coordinates into the navicomputer, sitting back in his seat. Anakin, sitting at one of the cockpit's other stations, frowned at him. Padme and Obi-Wan had summed up what they'd learned of Ani's background for him, which he seemed to have accepted without surprise, but it was clear that he wasn't comfortable around Ani. Padme supposed she couldn't blame him. She couldn't look at the little holonose footage of Amidala that she could find without shivering. If Obi-Wan had any reaction to his counterpart, he hadn't shown it. Padme was starting to worry about him. Eventually, Anakin said,
"Do you make a lot of runs to Naboo?"
"Every couple of months," Ani said, with that same cautious tone. "They kicked the Trade Federation out 12 years ago, the rest of the Commerce Guilds a few years later, so they use a lot of independent traders. It's a pretty nice run if you've got the right goods."
"I don't believe I've ever heard of a single system that's successfully managed to disengage itself from the Trade Federation," Obi-Wan observed. "Even in our time, Naboo didn't attempt it."
"We couldn't afford to," Padme said. "Some members of the Royal Advisory Council suggested it, but it just wasn't practical at the time." She was quiet for a moment, conjuring up the memory of the few days she had spent on Naboo during the end of the occupation, the fear she had layered over with determination and sharp adrenaline, and tried to extend that over the period of a year or more. How desperate had Amidala been by the time it ended? How angry! Angry and desperate enough to cease all interaction with the Trade Federation, at least. angry and desperate enough to risk bankrupting the entire system if the attempt backfired on the Naboo. Angry and desperate enough to secede from the Republic. She fell silent as they approached the planet. Two of Naboo's moons were out of sight at the moment, with the third, Omadun, just visible. As they drew closer, the twilight sensor boards began lighting up with numerous contacts. Anakin peered at them suspiciously.
"Those are warships," he said in surprise.
"What?" Padme leaned over his shoulder to see.
"Naboo doesn't have its own fleet."
She let the words trail off as Ani laughed.
"Naboo's had a home fleet for more than a decade now. Rumor is the Queen mortgaged one of the moons to pay for it, but no one knows for sure."
He looked longingly out the viewport at the nearest capital ship.
"I always wanted to do a flyby on one of those battle stores, but it's restricted airspace, and I don't want to get blown out of the sky."
Padme studied the battleships unhappily as they drew close enough to see them, the twilight giving them a wide berth. "I don't recognize the design," she said, looking between Anakin and Obi-Wan, who were both considering the home fleet thoughtfully.
"I'm sure the specs aren't available to the general public, but it looks like a variation on a very old design from the Mandalorian Wars," Obi-Wan said after a moment. "There's no reason that it wouldn't be still perfectly valid, however."
Anakin squinted out the viewport at the flight pods on either side of the Battlestar they were passing.
"They look like starfighter carriers, but they've got an awful lot of guns. Covers all the bases. Why'd they go out of circulation?"
Obi-Wan shrugged.
"Someone in the Republic Navy presumably found something else they liked better."
"Same old, same old," Anakin sighed. Padme felt her mouth tighten as she recognized the Naboo emblem painted on top of the nearest Battlestar. The ship's name was spelled out on its side in both Futhark and Arabesh. Constellation, with Royal Naboo Navy in smaller letters beneath it. Naboo had always been a planet of peace. Never before in its history had it felt the need for a home fleet. The last time Padme had seen a warship fleet in orbit around Naboo had been during the Trade Federation blockade 13 years ago. She had hoped that she would never see one again. Captain Rex had moved up to the viewport to peer out at the battleships with a soldier's experienced eye.
"Think they'll hold up to a Republic Star Destroyer? Or a Sept Dreadnought, sir?"
"They look more maneuverable than a Dreadnought," Anakin said, tipping his head to one side consideringly.
"Not sure they've got as much armament as a Star Destroyer, though. And I think both those might have bigger guns, but I can't quite tell from here. But ours all fire from shielded ports, and I don't see any here. Could be that the guns are all inside and the hatches are shut, but most of the guns are on the outside. Could make them less vulnerable. No control tower, either. Aside from those flight pods, no bits to knock off. Smart."
"Yes," Obi-Wan agreed. "Those lines are Mon Cala, but there's an elegance to them that the Separatist ships lack. That must be the Naboo influence. That dark color won't show up as well to the naked eye as most of the warships I've seen, either. Though it won't make a difference for droid fighters." Ani turned to Padme.
"I like starships as much as the next guy, but do they always talk this much shop?"
Padme hesitated. "Well, they are in the business of war," she said at last, reluctantly. "I suppose it's professional interest."
Anakin turned one of his blinding grins on her.
"Sorry," he said.
"You're right, it is professional interest, but she's gorgeous, isn't she?"
"Forgive me if I can't see the attraction," Padme said. He looked a little hurt, but by now they were past the ring of the home fleet, moving purposefully in toward the planet. He, Obi-Wan, and Rex sat back, animatedly discussing what they had seen of the Naboo battlestars.
Padme clenched her fist on her knee, hard enough to dig her nails into her palm. How could they be so calm about it? That fleet represented everything that she had spent the past 10 years working to prevent, far more visibly than the distant Holonet reports of secession and war, because it was here, right in front of her eyes, around her planet. Look up, she thought furiously, as though Amidala could hear her. Look up! Do you really think there's any difference between this and what the Federation did 13 years ago? A war fleet is a war fleet. As the saying goes, he who rides a dragon can never dismount. What are you doing, Queen Amidala? Do you even know? After several long hours in the halls of healing, with no change in Yoda's condition, Dooku finally returned to the Senate building, where he sorted through the endless queue of messages and reports for his attention. Senators and planetary governing bodies were panicking after Alderaan's secession speech. Tykes, the Quarren senator from Dak, which, like a handful of other systems in the Republic, had 2 senators to reflect its split population, was apoplectic with rage over his planet's secession and his subsequent arrest. Dak's Mon Calamari senator, Mina Tils, was nowhere to be found. She had apparently left Coruscant before Amidala's broadcast and hadn't returned for the emergency session. The comm panel on his desk buzzed. Dooku tapped it to answer, bringing up a miniature hologram of one of the SOB department heads. What?
Supreme Chancellor, it's SSA Pilly from the Special Operations Bureau.
Dooku bit back his curse. What else did Bail Organa unleash on our system? Pilly sounded surprised.
We haven't found anything else, Your Excellency. One of my junior agents found something in Queen Amidala's broadcast that she brought to my attention. I think you'll want to hear this, sir.
Dooku's estimation of SOB ticked up a notch, since he had assumed that they were all in hysterics over the virus Bail Organa had unleashed before absconding with a copy of the files. What is it?
All conference in Special Agent Tulev,
Pilly said. An instant later, a second hologram appeared beside him, showing an anxious-looking Togruta female. She looked even more nervous upon seeing Dooku.
Sir, I'm Special Agent Tulev,
she said.
I was tasked with analyzing Queen Amidala's broadcast of the execution of the Jedi.
That wasn't interrupted by Organa's virus?
No, sir. That sort of thing is run on a different system, and we weren't affected.
She glanced at her supervisor, then swallowed and said,
Sir, there are some inconsistencies in the broadcast that indicate it might not be entirely authentic.
What do you mean? Tulev looked at Pilly again, as if hoping for encouragement, then locked her hands behind her back and said,
There's a 60% probability that some or all of the footage isn't real, moving to 80% on the last 30 seconds or so. Sir.
Dooku felt unease settle in the pit of his stomach. He clenched his fist beneath the table, where the 2 intelligence agents couldn't see it. Explain.
The first 30 seconds of the broadcast is genuine at a probability of 90%, including Amidala's speech up to 13 years ago.
She leaned over to tap a control that the holofeed hadn't picked up, and the broadcast sprang up on one of his desk's other holoprojectors. A transcript scrolled down beside it. Dooku frowned at it until he found the point Tula was talking about.
After that, the probability begins to degrade.
Come to the point, Agent Tulev.
Sir, I'm saying that the second half of the broadcast was faked,
Tulev said.
Amidala and Kenobi never executed those Jedi.